too long, our government, our courts haven't looked like America. I believe it's time that we have a court reflects the full talent and greatness of our nation with a nominee of extraordinary qualifications.
That is the voice of President Joe Biden announcing his pick last week for the U.S. Supreme Court, Ketanji Brown Jackson. For as long as the United States has had a Supreme Court, a black woman has never been nominated for a position on that court. Now, some of the reasons for this are pretty obvious. Black Americans, and particularly black women, have been prevented from accessing full citizenship in this country for a really long time. But even after the passage of the Civil Rights Act, even after the end of de jure segregation, this particular group of long-standing Americans have been absolutely overlooked. Simply put, they have frequently been unable to share spaces of power with their white contemporaries. The Biden administration appears to be trying to change that with this recent nomination. And think about this. Think about what year it is. Think about how many justices have sat on the Supreme Court. Is it something we should be proud of to be able to say that we are finally nominating an African-American woman to sit on the nation's highest court? Is it something we should be ashamed of? Is it a moment to reflect on the profound reliance on inequality that has guided the United States since its founding? We want to better understand nominee Jackson, why she was nominated, and the broader political and cultural implications of President Biden's decision. And we've got a wonderful guest with us to be able to do that. Kimberly Atkins-Store is a senior opinion writer at the Boston Globe, a former trial and appellate litigation attorney, and she's the co-host of a pretty wonderful podcast called Sisters in Law. Kimberly, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start here. Who is Ketanji Brown Jackson? What's her background? And why is she the person that Joe Biden has decided should be the first African-American woman on the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, Judge Jackson is currently a judge on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. It's a federal appellate court where she served since last year. Before that, she spent many years on the federal trial court here in Washington, D.C. She's formerly a defense attorney, as well as spending some time on the Sentencing Commission. She is a graduate of Harvard Law School and grew up in Miami. And Joe Biden nominated her in addition to the fact that she has a long list of qualifications and experience, because 2 years ago, he promised on the campaign trail to nominate a black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court to help bring more balance to that court demographically and to make it look more like the United States of America and the people who the court's opinions affect.
Yeah. So one of the cool things about this nomination, I think, is that if Joe Biden had not selected Ketanji Brown Jackson, he actually had a pretty substantial list of other African-American women who have the kinds of experiences and are in a position to be able to be nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court. Talk about what this field looked like and how impressive it was.
It really was. So two things can be true at the same time. It can be true that in many professions, including practicing law and in the judiciary, that there is a lot of inequality in the way that the system looks. When I practiced law, I did not see a lot of other Black women in the courts in Boston or New York or elsewhere. That's because of all the systemic barriers that you talked about in your open. But at the same time, despite that, there are many, many women of color, many Black women who have overcome those obstacles and forged very strong careers within the judiciary. And because of that, the president did have a deep field of candidates to choose from. People like another federal court judge, Michelle Childs in South Carolina, people like Leandra Kruger, who is on the California Supreme Court and who served a long time in the U.S. Solicitor General's office here in Washington, D.C., having argued, I believe, more than a dozen cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. You had people like Sherilyn Ifill of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and just a host of people that reportedly were considered by the president. There was no shortage of candidates, all of them with very strong credentials. And that's an extra testament to them and their qualifications in that they were able to overcome the obstacles that are before them in a country like the United States of America, and still have would have been in any of them in their own right would have been a qualified candidate for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, I'm talking with Kimberly Atkins-Storr, senior opinion writer at the Boston Globe, former litigation specialist, and the co-host of a podcast called Sisters in Law. We're talking about the nomination of Ketanji Brown Jackson to be the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. Joe Biden selected her last week. Her confirmation hearings will get started shortly. Right now, they'll be doing a lot of vetting and looking into her past and discussing the things that she's done. We want to hear from you during this conversation as well. How do you feel about President Biden's new Supreme Court nomination? Are you excited about the prospect of having an African-American woman on the court, something that hasn't happened in the entire history of the United States? What would that mean to you? Are you somebody who feels like that's a milestone that we should have reached before? Are you somebody who will take inspiration from her presence on the Supreme Court? And if she is appointed to the court, if she does survive the confirmation process, how do you think her presence will change the court? How do you think it will change the way that the court approaches all kinds of questions that it has approached until now without the influence of an African-American woman? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook or to Twitter, put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. Kimberly, I want to talk just a little about the court for people who may not be as familiar with it as others. And I want to start with this question. Judge Jackson sits on the D.C. Circuit, and mm-hmm. a lot of people don't really know what that court is, what it does, or how important it is in the judicial system. There are more justices on the Supreme Court who come from the D.C. Circuit than from any of the other appellate circuits, and there's an important reason why that's true. Talk about that significance of her getting the nomination over some of the other possibilities.
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons why Judge Jackson may have ultimately been the pick by the president, despite the broad field of talented and qualified candidates. And one is, you're exactly right, that she came from the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit has been seen as sort of, almost the minor leagues for the Supreme Court for a very long time. They take on a broad range of issues, more broad than some of the other federal courts of appeals. And just so that the listeners understand, the courts of appeals are really where law is made. Mm-hmm. At the trial court, that's where disputes between the parties are brought and litigated. But once you get to the appeals process, that is when these courts begin making rulings that bind others. So for the D.C. Circuit, when that decision is made, that decision is law in that jurisdiction. And it's the same at the U.S. Supreme Court. They're really not looking at who wins or loses, but what the law is and speaking clearly on that. So she has that experience. She also has the experience of having gone before the Senate to be confirmed three times before, twice as a federal judge and once as a member of the Sentencing Commission. And each time she was confirmed with bipartisan support. So it will be very difficult now for Republicans, particularly those who have already voted in favor of her, to vote against her now. Now, of course, the Supreme Court is a different job than all of those other jobs, and they will have to take that into consideration. But because she's coming from this court where Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Antonin Scalia and the Chief Justice all served on the D.C. Circuit, she's coming from that same place, it makes it a lot harder to vote against her.
Yeah. And the experience that she's had, as you point out, is very similar to the kind of experience she'll have on the Supreme Court. But she also has something that most of the members of the Supreme Court in history have not had, and that's her time being a public defender, being somebody who was representing the poorest in our society in the judicial system. Talk about how distinct that will be in the U.S. Supreme Court.
It will be very distinct. As you say, there is no current justice that has that experience as a defense attorney in their background, let alone as a public defender, someone who had been appointed to represent people who did not have the ability to pay for their own legal representation. Not since Thurgood Marshall has the court had someone on the bench with that kind of experience. And this is very important, particularly as the court takes up criminal cases, to have that background, to have that understanding about what it's like to defend these cases. Of course, we have other justices, including Sonia Sotomayor, who are former prosecutors. And I think that's the importance of diversity, not just in terms of race and geography, but diversity in terms of background on this court. You have a lot of former federal judges. It's really homogenous in that sense. But the kind of experience that they have, and so Judge Jackson was a public defender. She served on the Sentencing Commission, where she dealt with a lot head-on with a lot of issues, including things like mass incarceration and ways to address that. So these are the things that she would be bringing to the court, particularly for the criminal docket, that would be really important for everyone to consider when these cases come up.
Yeah. And I also want to talk about the court itself and the kind of place it is and the kind of place it is even in Washington. I spent 5 years as a reporter covering the Supreme Court from about 2002 to 2007. And one of the things I remember quite distinctly is how white of a place it was then. Now, again, that's almost 20 years ago, and I haven't been back a whole lot since I left, so I don't want to speak for what the dynamic looks like now. But certainly among the justices, nothing has changed over that time in terms of racial makeup. But it's also the other parts of the court. I can remember many days sitting in the courtroom, and Clarence Thomas and I were the only people of color in the courtroom. Very seldom would there be a lawyer representing one of the sides in a case who was not a white man or a white woman. Even the court, even among other institutions in Washington, I always felt was wider than the rest of Washington. So the idea of, first of all, having two African-American justices on the court is novel. But this idea of an African-American woman, which I would say I maybe saw three or four in that 5 years, African-American women participate in anything at the court. I just want to take a little time to have you talk about how significant this is just on those racial terms.
It's extraordinarily significant. And your experience was very similar to mine. I started covering the court, it looks like right after you did, about 2007, and covered it full time for about a decade and still attend arguments. And it is frequent that I and Justice Thomas are the only Black people in the room. They're very white and very male, including the Supreme Court bar. Very few women argue before the Supreme Court, and even fewer people of color and Black folks. It was interesting. It calls to mind a memory when Justice Sonia Sotomayor was giving a very impassioned dissent in the Michigan affirmative action case from a few years ago, which I'm sure you remember. And I was looking around as somebody, a graduate from Wayne State University, one of the schools involved, and looking even in the press room, in the press alcove, and there were only two Black people in the press alcove. And I thought about the fact that I had the opportunity to get my education and to advance and to make it to the point where I was a practicing attorney and then a journalist covering the highest court in the land, something that very few reporters get to do. Any reporter gets to do. And I had made it to that point, but looking around the room, I was reminded of all the obstacles that I had to overcome to get there.
Yeah.
And hearing the Justice Sotomayor talk about them in real time, I felt like I was experiencing it in real time. And affirmative action, of course, is one of the many cases that Judge Brown, if she is to become Judge Jackson, if she is to become Justice Jackson, will take on. So she will be in that room. And though the court has a 6-3 majority, and I think it's pretty safe to say the outcome of any affirmative action case is fairly predetermined yeah. at this point, at least she'll have a voice in that room and be able to bring that experience and that diversity so that the other justices will have to listen and consider it. And perhaps the next time it will be her giving that impassioned dissent.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson and her nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll continue talking about what that will mean if she's confirmed as a U.S. Supreme Court justice. We'll talk about some of the cases that she might have influence over and how she might just change the very dynamic inside the nation's highest court. We'll also get going on the phones and on social media. 313-577-1019. Call and tell us how important you think it is that Joe Biden has nominated the first African-American woman to sit on the U.S. Supreme Court. Do you think she will change things there if she's confirmed? What would you like to see changed about the U.S. Supreme Court? You can also go to Facebook or to Twitter and put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. As always, thanks for tuning in. My guest is Kimberly Atkins-Store, senior opinion writer at the Boston Globe, former trial and appellate litigation attorney, and co-host of the Sisters in Law podcast. We are talking about President Joe Biden's pick to be the next U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson. She would be the first African-American woman to serve on the court, only the third African-American in all of U.S. history to serve on the U.S. court, the U.S. Supreme Court. We're talking about what that would mean, what it means for history, what it means for the present, what it means for the future to break down that barrier. Also talking about what it will mean in practical terms, in terms of some of the cases that the U.S. Supreme Court decides. We would love to hear from you during the conversation as well. How do you feel about President Joe Biden's Supreme Court nomination? Are you excited about the prospect of an African-American woman joining the bench for the first time in Washington? What would that mean to you? Would you draw inspiration from that? What do you think the GOP response is likely to be to Judge Jackson's nomination? Do you think she will be confirmed or not? Also, give us a call and let us know what you think about the Supreme Court and how you would like to see it change, perhaps. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook or Twitter, put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. I want to take a listen really quick to some of what Judge Jackson said when she was nominated by President Joe Biden last week.
If I'm fortunate enough to be confirmed as the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, I can only hope that my life and career, my love of this country and the Constitution, and my commitment to upholding the rule of law and the sacred principles upon which this great nation was founded will inspire future generations of Americans.
That was Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson talking about her nomination to become the next U.S. Supreme Court justice. Kim, I also want to talk about the political context here. Of course, the Senate is split 50-50, which means that the vice president, Kamala Harris, has the ability to give the Democrats the majority if they need it. I suspect that from the early reactions that I've seen from some Republican senators, that it won't be quite that close, that perhaps because she's familiar to many of the senators and because of her incredibly strong qualifications, that that there will be some hubbub about this. There always is. But that this may not be as partisanly divided a vote as we've seen in recent years.
Yes, Stephen, I think that as of now, unless something new is revealed, her chances of being confirmed are very high. Mm-hmm. And I do think that they will come with at least a handful of Republican votes if passed as prologue. There are people like Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina who likes to remind people that he voted in favor of Democratic nominees like Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan because he believes that so long as there's no disqualification, that when it comes to the president, to the victor goes the spoils, and one of the spoils is being able to select the Supreme Court justices of their choice. Mm-hmm. There may also be some other Republicans who have voted for Jackson in the past, people like Lisa Murkowski, for example, who may also join in. That being said, we're still in a much more politically divided time here in Washington, and that extends to things like presidential nominees, where in the past you had people like, Antonin Scalia, who was confirmed unanimously, or Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who had really big, mm-hmm. big lopsided bipartisan support. More and more in recent years, you see the votes for Supreme Court justices have a 5 on one side and a 4 on the other, really much more evenly divided in a way that historically has never happened. So I think that will still continue to be the case. It may be a 53-47 sort of thing. But I think for most things right now in Washington that are split right down the middle, 50-50, that in itself will be a victory. And both Justice Jackson and the president will be able to tout that bipartisan support.
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Let's start with Harry in Sterling Heights. Harry, what's on your mind?
Yes, I love the conversation. I totally approve of the new nominee. And we need more diversity on the Supreme Court. I totally, but does it make a difference to the common man on the street who's trying to make his house payment and make a car payment with the war in Russia? Does it make a difference to him?
Harry, that's a great question. And I think a lot of people wonder about how much what the court does has an effect on their lives. Kimberly, I can think of a number of things that really do matter in people's lives that the court takes up. But I want to give you a chance to talk first about why the court matters.
Yeah, and I understand that it can be hard to explain why the court matters with so many pressing issues that Americans are facing, still coming out of the pandemic, dealing with economic issues, concerned about the world, as the caller said. But the Supreme Court affects a number of things that affects every American. I mean, for example, just today, the court is hearing arguments on the ability of the executive branch to carry out its wishes, to carry out regulations. Now, that may not seem very important, but this case deals with climate change. Mm-hmm. And if the court rules really reins in the ability of the EPA or other agencies to act to address climate change, it also reins in the ability, it could rein in the ability of other agencies, healthcare agencies, to ensure that things like medicine is covered by people's insurers to make sure that their healthcare and their prescriptions are affordable. It can rein in the ability of regulators to regulate products that might be dangerous, that make it into the marketplace. Mm-hmm. Just this one case and the issues involved with administrative law, as dry as that seems, can have a real impact on Americans. And that's, leave aside other big things like criminal justice cases that decide whether the standards, whether people are free or not, and cases that involve access to abortion care and cases that affect voting rights, the ability of people to be able to cast their ballots and choose who their representatives are. It affects every aspect of American life. So if people aren't concerned about the U.S. Supreme Court, they should be.
Yeah. One of my favorite kind of reference points when I was covering the court for people who would ask about why it matters was always the ERISA cases. And for people who don't know what ERISA is, it's the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. And it sets minimum standards for things like retirement and health plans. And every term, there are a couple of cases that come before the court where they have to decide how to enforce or how the rest of the government should enforce that law. That affects almost all of us, right? Think of how many people have privately, held retirement or health plans. I mean, if you pay attention to the docket at the court, you would see that they're pretty busy often managing things like that. And so, there are lots and lots of things that the court does that affect our everyday life. One of the things that I have lamented for a while is the idea that, the court doesn't get covered the way that it used to. And so people know less, I think, about what they're up to and what effect it has. But that's about journalism and the struggles that we've had maintaining, press corps at places like the Supreme Court. But great question, Harry. And again, thanks for the call. But let's go to Dennis in Dearborn. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Just real quick, going back to the Twin Towers being knocked down and the observation came back that it was a failure in imagination. That changed my whole view of looking at history. So when I look at everything about this appointment, I am in favor of. I think it's a great advancement. But as an elderly white male, I fear what the whack-a-mole will be back to the, once again, advancement of our African-American brothers and sisters being somehow imaginatively countered with something that's bizarre.
So you feel like there might be some sort of backlash, I guess, to the idea of a black woman on the court. Is that right, Dennis?
Yes, that's it.
Yeah. Dennis, I really appreciate the call and the comments. Kimberly, can't argue with Dennis's point. I think there always is backlash to black advancement. Judge Jackson, though, I think is perhaps in somewhat of a unique position to be able to fend that off herself, but also I think the administration is on such firm ground with this nomination, and you will see, I think, Republicans coming out. We've already seen Mitt Romney, Rob Portman, prominent Republicans come out and say, "Hey, look, I think this is a pretty good pick." So I don't know. But what Dennis is saying is always true.
I think that it is. And you've also, despite the comments from people like Senator Ron Romney, you also see folks like Ted Cruz who have said that the mere fact that the president promised to bring this diversity to the court is somehow insulting to Judge Jackson and other black people. You always see political messaging like that. And I fear that it is true when you do see a major advancement so clearly in a way that's meant to address the inequality and the lack of representation in our nation, that does result in resentment, and particularly when that racial resentment is ginned up by politicians for political purposes. We saw the first black president, Barack Obama, face that, and I think we're still seeing the ripples of that today. So I do expect that to happen, but I think you're also right. I think that Judge Jackson, as a black woman in spaces like the law that have been overwhelmingly white and overwhelmingly male, has had to learn to navigate that her entire professional life. Mm-hmm. And I think she will continue to do that throughout her confirmation process. And if she is confirmed throughout her tenure as a justice on the court.
Let's go to Ed in Detroit. Ed, what's on your mind?
I think the president made an excellent choice, and I can only say a friend of mine said back in the 80s when President Reagan nominated Sandra Day O'Connor, she said it's almost 200 years overdue, and in this case, it's more than 200 years overdue. There's also another area of work for judges that's sort of lacking on the court, and that's judges who have experience as state court judges. Sandra Day O'Connor, I believe, was the last justice to have that experience. In the 19th century, that experience was very common. In the 20th century, certainly since the Second World War, it's been rare.
Yeah. I mean,
O'Connor and Brennan, William Brennan, are the only people I can think of who had that experience. And it would be wonderful to see more state court judges put on the Supreme Court.
Ed, that's a great point, and it's something that in legal circles in Washington gets talked about quite a bit, that lack of practical trial, I guess, experience that some justices have as a judge. Can we talk about what Ed's bringing up here?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. And of course, two of the people reportedly on Biden's shortlist, Judge Childs, as well as Justice Kruger, do have that state court experience. But yes, just diversity of backgrounds and experience, period, on the court is something that is important. Justice O'Connor was also the last justice to have been an elected official. Mm-hmm. She was formerly an Arizona state lawmaker. And so all of these experiences are really important for a court that is tasked with interpreting the very laws that legislators pass. So the vast majority of the disputes that are settled in the country are settled in state court. So that experience is truly important as well. So it would be great to have a court that isn't just this Ivy League federal court pipeline and has and draws from a number of other places.
Yeah. Okay, Kimberly Atkins-Store. It's always great to have you here on the program to talk about things like this, but especially today with Ketanji Brown Jackson. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
That's going to do it for us today. Come back tomorrow when I'm going to talk with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, and then I'm going to have a conversation with writer Dan Charnas about his new book on Jay Dilla. This is 101.9 WDETFM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.